Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the High Speed Stuff podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And I'm Ben Bullen. I'm a video writer here. I forgot for a second, Scott, at the same website. I forgot my name.
The name part. I thought that was the easy part.
I know. I'm caught up, though. I saw it on an index card. So good thing we're taking notes.
Pretty slick.
What's going on today, Scott?
Well, I think we're gonna go back in time a little bit. We're going to go back to some antique engines. We want to talk about some different types of engines, more so than the current engines that we see today in cars. You know, like, we're talking a lot about hybrids. We're talking a lot about plug-in electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a lot of different technology. But let's go back in time, and we'll talk about some of the antique technology that goes into engines.
So antique, but not ancient. So how far back are we going?
Not ancient. We're going to go back turn of the century, I guess. You know, late 1800s, early 1900s.
Okay.
And you probably have seen, or at least know of, the engines that we're talking about today. These are called hit and miss engines, and they're also called stationary engines. They're also called chuggers by some people, and what they are, these are big, huge farm engines that run things like threshers and sawmills and grist mills, and I think even smaller versions ran ice cream churns. Just anything that normally would have somebody doing a repetitive motion physically, this took the place of that at some point in history, usually on a farm.
Which is interesting, because nowadays we don't usually think about these sort of engines. A lot of people, because we live in a society where a lot of people aren't using farm machinery or even seeing it.
Well, yeah, they do, but a lot of people are still using it. It's just they're using much more modern versions of it.
These much more sophisticated.
Yeah, exactly. These stationary engines that I'm talking about are the type that you see at the, in a section off to the side at the state fair.
Yeah.
They're enormous engines. They look a lot like, almost like steam locomotives when you see them at first, because they have flywheels on them that are so huge. They look like train wheels. You know, the old train wheels, the great big spokes.
Yeah.
Very similar in design. They've got, well, I shouldn't say similar. They're close. They've got two large flywheels on each side that carry momentum. And, I'm getting into the we're starting to get to the point where we're going to talk about the operation of them. But what I want to say is that these engines, these hit-and-miss engines, as they're called, are really unique in the way they operate. And we just don't see anything like this today. They do make modern versions of it. There's one company that still does, kind of almost like a third-world use of them that, require very little maintenance. I think they're also used for maybe oil pumps, things like that, because these engines are used for pumps. But we'll get into the operation of these things in a moment. But they're really unique in the way they operate.
Yeah. Now, that's the question that I think a lot of listeners have on their minds. First off, hopefully there are several people who are excited that we're hitting this topic.
I would think so.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
And the people who are not quite sure about why we call this a hit and miss engine. Mm-hmm. How would you explain it to
them? All right, well, a hit, I guess if you want to call it's a hit and miss engine, because there are two stages of this thing. It still is a four-cycle engine, really. And I hope I'm not misstating this, because this is so odd. There's still intake, there's still compression, there's still combustion, and there's still exhaust. So that's the four-stroke engine. Now, what's strange about this is that it has the ability to pause itself in the exhaust stroke, so that nothing is really happening inside the engine. It's freewheeling at a certain point. So it determines by engine RPM when it coasts, I guess. And it makes this really distinct sound. It's this engine's barely running, really, is what it is. It determines by RPMs based on the flywheel revolutions when this thing fires, when it coasts. And it's all, it's a simple yet still complex governing system that allows this to happen. And what it does is it allows the exhaust valve to stick open, so that the engine, again, freewheels, no compression, no spark, anything's happening. It just kind of chugs along, and it makes kind of a whooshing sound. And then when it does fire, when the exhaust hits, it's a pop sound.
Whoosh,
so this
pop.
Thing, these things are extremely fuel efficient. They really are fuel efficient. They, in fact, some, you know, the early versions of them were steam engines, because that was the technology at the time. Then they started to slowly be replaced by gas-powered engines, the same design, And, you know, then they get to a point where, you know, the gasoline was kind of expensive at the time, you know, compared to other fuels that could burn, like kerosene. Okay. So they would start them with gasoline and then switch them over to run on kerosene. That's how lean they could run these things.
Wow.
They were able to continue to burn that way. So, and what's really odd, they have one big cylinder. It's a horizontal cylinder. Hmm. Maybe I should just go into, like, one step here, like one process of how it all works. Okay, well, here's the thing. It's not a throttled engine. It's self-controlled. It's controlling itself via these flywheels. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there's a governing system. Honestly, this is one of those things that you'd have to see to understand, you know, to be able to physically look at this thing and put it together how it's really operating. But I can try to describe to you. So again, it really runs lean. They barely operate. They sound like they're just chugging along when you hear them. It's kind of a like I mentioned, like a whoosh, whoosh, yeah, whoosh,
wait,
whoosh.
You keep going whoosh. Do the whoosh again.
Whoosh, 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 whoosh.
I couldn't pop loud enough.
That kind of fill a fit.
Yeah. We'll just have somebody put a good pop in there.
It's more of a bang, really.
Of a bang.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll you know what? At the end of this, I'm going to give you a place to look where you can find just a fantastic example of this thing, and it's one of those videos that's really cool to watch, and you won't even believe what you're seeing. But I'm going to mention it at the very end of this podcast.
Okay.
But
I'm going to hold you to that.
I want you to, because it's something worth watching if you have any interest in this, and it's a very good example of watching one of these types of engines run. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit scary. It really is. It's a frightening thing. You think that the person's in danger that's near this thing. But
we'll tell people at the
end. All right, so anyways, here's the way it works. Now, again, it's not throttled. You remember, it's kind of the self-governing device. Mm-hmm. What happens is it only fires when it needs to. It has a suction intake valve and an exhaust valve that can be held open. So remember, that's the freewheeling part, is when the exhaust valve is held open. So there's no suction in the cylinder at that point, and you know, it freewheels. It saves fuel because the governor, you know, RPM controlled. Or if the engine is under load, like let's say that you know, more power is required,
right?
This will pick that up, and it will fire more often. It'll fire more rapid fire than it does normally because it's in this conservation mode where it's just barely staying alive.
Which I think is a really intelligent design.
It is, and it's so simple. It's just this. It just works.
It's mechanical. There's no computer involved.
No. This is purely mechanical. Purely mechanical. So as the engine slows down and the governor activates a rod that closes the exhaust valve. Okay. So the engine RPMs are starting to drop down. It realizes it needs more power. You know, the mm-hmm. other three strokes are happening. The other three strokes are happening. But it realizes it needs more power. So the governor allows the valve to shut, which then sends a signal to the spark plug to fire, and you know, bang, it happens one more time. And then the valve opens up and it stays open for the next two or three cycles until it requires more power again. Mm-hmm. So, again, like you said, intelligent design. So I think I'm skipping ahead here on my notes, Will, but the spark plug flares, the engine speeds up slightly. So what happens is the flywheel gets this kind of chugging motion. If you watch the flywheels, they're spinning really quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, when you see a tire on the road, highway speeds, you'll see the tire, it almost looks like it's standing still.
Right.
And then it kind of backs up. You'll see that effect happening. I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but you'll see that effect happening with these big flywheels. And it'll start to slow down. You can see it start to back mm-hmm. off a little bit. And then you hear the engine fire, and the wheel will pick up speed again. It'll so it pulses.
I see.
Under load, that can be, you know, smoothed out considerably so that it's even consistent power.
So what, I guess before we move on from this point, the next immediate questions would be, what happened to hit and miss engines, or what are the relative advantages? You know what? Let's do that first, Scott. What are the relative advantages of a hit and miss engine?
Well, it's like I said, it's extremely lean, mm-hmm. and at the time it was just it was the current technology.
Okay.
It's efficient to run. At the time it was the best technology they had because they were switching over from steam to gas, and a lot of the parts, you know, these are made of cast iron. These are made of steel. They weren't manufactured in facilities where, you know, they're using robots to measure, you know, thicknesses and gaps and, you know, everything else.
No, don't make fun of my robot factory on the air anymore.
No, I'm not. No, but they the thing is, it's old tech right now.
Okay.
And, you know, eventually it became old tech quickly. You know, mm-hmm. suddenly things were a lot more tight and things were running a lot better. And, you know, the standard four-cycle smaller engines were putting out more power because a lot of these engines that I'm talking about, these were huge. The parts were big. The horsepower or the output of them was not all that great. Now, it ran mills, it ran sawmills and things, so it was great at, you know, things that required a almost like a PTO would be today, like to run these in, you know, accessory items. See. So, like, you'd hook a belt to the engine, which would then drive another series of belts that would run the sawmill. Well, you know, the power from this thing may have only been like 30 horsepower. Yet it's the size of a big farm tractor these days,
right? I see.
Or a big truck, mm-hmm. and I don't mean just a truck engine. I mean the size of the truck.
The whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. The size of the truck. It's enormous. These early engines are, and the smaller ones that are, you know, half that size, they may have 10 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing that you know, the technology as it grew and it became a lot more precise. You know, that's when these just started to kind of go away.
And we had that ongoing drive toward miniaturization, yeah. minimization of weight, which we still see today.
And one other thing is, yeah, you're right, miniaturization, you know, just it was impossible to keep these things around. They were just mm-hmm. too big. Another thing is that during World War II, there was a push for, you know, gathering as much metal as possible to use for, you know, military implements, as
great
we talked
point.
About yeah. in other podcasts. And unfortunately, a lot of these engines were scrapped. They were used just strictly for metal. They were melted down. So a lot of the old, I guess I call them dinosaur engines, were scrapped. Yeah, they were scrapped.
A lot of the dinosaur engines, regardless of how intelligently they were designed,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they were, I mean, like I said, they were on their way out. So, you know, why keep them around? We need the metal.
But some of the, fear not, if you are an enthusiast of hit-and-miss engines, mm-hmm. some of the principles we still find in some modern vehicles, especially like the flywheel, right? Okay.
Sure.
So, Scott, I'm just going to go out on a limb here, you being the auto editor.
Okay.
You've maybe heard of clutches.
Yes.
Okay. So, one sentence, what is a clutch?
A clutch is something that allows you to engage a gear so that your transmission, you can shift between gears on a transmission without grinding the gears, and it allows you to seamlessly shift between the gears.
In theory, unless you're a student driver, which is a funny story.
It's probably a not so easy way to put that. But
well, you didn't have much to work with. It was like one sentence, right?
Yeah,
one sentence
surprised.
Well, in a car's clutch, a flywheel, and this is from an article that we have on how clutches work,
mm-hmm.
a flywheel connects to the engine and a clutch plate connects to the transmission.
Mm-hmm.
So a flywheel is part of that process that we're talking about, even in modern vehicles.
It's like the flywheel is the link between the engine and the transmission.
Exactly, exactly. Nail on the head here. Okay, so basically, a flywheel specifically, and you're right exactly when you talk about its role there, a flywheel specifically is best described as a heavy wheel attached to a rotating shaft that smooths out delivery of power from the motor to the machine. And so here, I'm not going to get too much into the physics, right,
mm-hmm.
or too deeply into it. The inertia of the flywheel sort of opposes fluctuations in the speed of the engine, and then it stores, optimally, it stores the excess energy there for, I guess, intermittent or use at intervals.
Sure.
Intermittent
use. When the engine's not producing power, it's mm-hmm. still coasting at the same speed, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's pulsating just a bit, but it does carry that momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the old engines did, except they were external. They were huge wheels on the outside. There was one on each side. So that that rotating shaft that was driven by the piston is just on the outside of the engine rather than on the inside where you can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have something like that. It's just inside, and it's one small one.
Right. We made some improvements to the original design, right?
I would think so.
But
yeah.
the original concept, you know, don't fix it if it's not broken.
Mm-hmm.
We just took it and ran with it. So for a lot of people hearing about hit-and-miss engines or hearing about, well, without knowing exactly what a flywheel is and why it does what it does, I think a lot of people would be surprised to see how common these are. These are in your favorite Honda Civic, right? These
mm-hmm.
are in everybody's favorite Monte Carlo.
Sure.
Or at least my favorite Monte Carlo.
I knew you'd mention it somehow.
I have to.
Yeah,
I
we're talking about antique engines, and you somehow mentioned your Monte Carlo.
With a flywheel, it made sense. I love that
Good
car,
work.
Scott. I can't.
Good work.
It's like my kid.
Yeah, I know.
It right.
makes you choked up a little bit to talk about it.
I did.
It?
I did get a little choked up on dream cars. So, all right, when we when we talk about the hit and miss engine, which, as you said, is old tech, and we talk about the flywheel, which exists still in modern engines. Are there other engines, aside from cars, where people could expect to see a flywheel?
Well, sure. You know, a lot of people – well, actually, you know what? I'm going to take this a different direction.
Let's go a different way.
I'm going to take this in a direction that a lot of people are making flywheel engines out of more modern engines. Now, I've seen some in the past where they make smaller flywheel engine. And we're talking about tabletop-type engines, right?
Okay.
And some of these are beautiful. Some of them are extremely well-machined and shiny and, you know, really, really well laid out, beautiful. Others are a little rough, but they're just a project. You know, they're just a restoration maybe.
Almost a hobby.
But you may look at I'll just take an example, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but a Briggs & Stratton engine from the 50s or 40s.
Okay.
And they may convert that into a flywheel engine with two external flywheels and the magneto system that it requires, you know, in order – the different type of system that it requires in order to keep this thing running. It's really just kind of interesting to see the hobby that – or I guess the hobby culture that's evolved around this. If you do a keyword search for hit-and-miss engine – you can find videos of these things running. You can see it. And a big thing with them is a lot of the hobbyists is that they like to show you how slow they can make these things idle, which is kind of cool because they can take it way down to the point where it barely is operating.
And they kind of can – it's a competition amongst hobbyists and enthusiasts,
right? It seems like it. Yeah, I'm kind of gathering that because we were looking at some videos. We were reading a lot about it, and I was finding that a lot of them were really, for some reason, just really, really – I don't know, focused on the idea that they could get this thing to barely run, which I thought was kind of cool because, you know, if you have a lawnmower at home and you've got it even at the lowest idle setting, it's running, but it's still running pretty quick. You still hear it, you know, the pop, 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 pop. You know,
yeah, it's definitely
a lot faster than that. These are, like I said, the you hear that whoosh, whoosh sound many times before you hear it pop again. So there's a lot of, you know, they're really getting this thing to run on almost no fuel at all.
Oh, which goes to a point that we'd be remiss if we let it pass. If people are interested in these sort of engines, it is possible to build one. You know, it is possible to make a model to get a kit of it.
They sell kits, which I think would be a lot of fun to make one. I'm sure it's a pretty intense hobby to have because you need a lot of mechanical skill.
Right.
A lot of them that I saw, you get a lot of the raw materials and you cut or mill the materials yourself. I don't think, I mean, there may be some out there that are just assembly. The kit has everything you need, you assemble it. That may be out there. The ones I saw required welding. They required...
There's a level of prerequisite skill.
Exactly. And, even for these kits, I mean, I noticed that you can download vintage battery covers or, wrappers for the coils, and you can say, so it looks like...
Yeah.
Vintage batteries, or
that's
cool.
Know,
which is kind of cool. And there's a lot of things like that you can do to give these things some authenticity. A look of authenticity. Anyways.
Should we get one for the office? That'd be kind of cool.
That would be a lot of fun.
We have those. We have the the transmission.
We have transmission in many parts in our one of our meeting rooms here. That would be really cool to have an operating engine here.
Yeah, it'd be so good if you're having some moment where you're shuffling for notes, which does happen to us sometimes.
Sure.
You could just turn on the flywheel. Hey, everyone, look at this.
Fire the engine up and let them be amused with that for a while and gather yourself.
It would work a couple of times.
Yeah, probably.
And I need one I can just carry bored. Around.
You know what? I think we're getting close to the end here. But
yeah.
You know what I do need to do? And
what's
I forgot to do this right at the head of the show here.
Oh,
this
I
was,
know.
This was indirectly mentioned by a listener. And it wasn't really a suggestion for a podcast, but it was indirectly suggested. Someone named Butch, and Butch is from Missouri, from what I gather from his note here. And he said that he had just mentioned that he had gone to some event, a local tractor show in Missouri, that had featured the steam and single fire gas engines is what he called them. And he just wanted to know if there was any way to design a biofuel version of this flywheel design that would be even more efficient, but would run on biofuel. And so you're kind of using like the, I guess, and in some way the best of both worlds. You could have this extremely lean running engine on a fuel that's supposedly renewable.
A very conservative machine on a renewable.
Exactly.
Fuel.
So that was Butch's idea from Missouri. So I figured we should mention that. That comes all the way back from September of 2009. I just remembered him mentioning that that engine that barely ran, and I didn't know what it was called at the time. We started talking about flywheel engines, and that led to hit and miss. And then I remembered this. So thank you, Butch.
Thank you, Butch.
One last thing.
One last
thing. Unless you've got more to go on the flywheel here.
Actually, I just wanted to hold you to the one last thing.
Yeah, I tell you, this is one of those definitely worth 3 minutes of your time to look up.
Yeah.
If you do a YouTube search for, it comes under two things. There's two videos here. One is Giant 1918 Hit and Miss Engine. And the next one, which is the same engine in a different location, different videographer, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is called 1918 Bessemer Euler Hit and Miss Engine. It's the same engine. This thing is massive. I mean, it's a huge 1918 Bessemer hit and miss engine that's operating in both cases. And the operator is standing, you know, these wheels are, the flywheels are about 7 feet tall.
Yeah, they'd have to be.
And one, he's standing in a field. The second one, he is on a trailer. They didn't even unload it at the event before they ran it. I don't know if it's just because it's so huge or just so difficult to get up and down onto this thing. But apparently this monstrosity it only has 35 horsepower. And ouch. it shakes the ground when it operates. It rumbles, and you can feel it on the ground when you're anywhere near when this thing's operating. It originally ran a grist mill, according to the person who was taping could hear the announcer at the event, because they said, hey, it looks like so and so's got his 1918 Bessemer, mm-hmm. Hit and miss running. And because they could hear it all the way across the fairgrounds,
and probably maybe feel
and
a little tension,
probably feel it, but this thing. It also has, aside from looking like just this massive old locomotive engine almost, is what mm-hmm. it looks like, it has an exhaust on it that points straight upward at the front of the engine, and it looks like the size of a steering wheel, about that big around. Maybe bigger than a coffee can.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a cap on it, and every time the spark plug fires, it shoots a smoke ring into the air. And the smoke ring goes, and this is the power of the thing. It sounds like a cannon going off. And it shoots probably, looks like 50 feet into the air, a smoke ring, every time that it bangs. And honestly, I don't know how this guy could even stand near this thing when it's operating. I mean, it's shaking and smoking and just, it's billowing smoke all around him. I don't
probably
know how you can see it.
Years of practice.
Probably, yeah. And just, confidence that nothing's going wrong there. He's got to be there to monitor everything that's happening. And he knows that it's supposed to work that way.
Right.
But it's really a cool video to watch, and it'll give you an idea of what we're talking about today. And of course, this is an extreme version of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many smaller versions of it. You can find those online too.
But we like the biggest stuff. We want the most extreme.
This one's really cool. I'm going to go back to my desk and watch it when we're done. Because I've seen it probably 3 or 4 times, but it's really cool.
And while we head out to do that, we hope you guys have had a great time listening to this podcast. Scott and I are probably going to hit the road here for, I don't know, until next time. But in the meantime, if you have any ideas for an upcoming podcast or would like to know more about anything auto-related, please send us an email
at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.